Welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and I was not really that into any animals as a kid. I had two cats, though. Cats are great.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and when I was little, I was super into white tigers for some reason.
My name is Marines, and I wasn't into animals either. We weren't an animal family, but there was a period of time that I was super into Tweety Bird, and I had Tweety Bird ring and Tweety Bird merchandise and shirts and a bunch of Tweety Bird stuff.
Okay, I went through that phase too. Like, I had like multiple like giant Tweety Birds. Like when I was fifth, sixth grade, maybe I had a Tweety Bird comforter. Had all the okay, yes, yes. I changed my answer. It's Tweety Bird.
See, I was Tasmanian Devil for me. That was the Looney Tune of choice. Was Taz?
I think mine was Taz too. I think I had Taz like bed sheets at some point. And I'm Sari Riley, and I was really into dogs and also chinchillas growing up.
This week, we are talking about the last DCOM of the 90s on what is also our last episode of 2019, Horse Sense. And now Mari is going to tell us what actually happened in this movie and whether it in any way resembles what Sari guessed last time.
I feel like Sari's big takeaway was that horse people can be of any gender, and that is correct. That is probably the most correct that you have been on any one guess. Horse people can be of any gender. This story, though, in particular, is actually the story of how healthcare in the U.S. is really broken and medical debt will ruin your life. So that's actually what we're watching. Joey Lawrence plays Michael Woods, and he is a spoiled 20-year-old who lives with his rich parents and Beverly Hills. Michael is depicted as lazy and self-involved and not doing well in his college courses and mostly interested in his new, also self-involved girlfriend named Gina. Michael's little cousin, Tommy, is coming for a visit from Montana. Tommy recently lost his father and looks up to Michael, especially since the two of them bonded years earlier at a family reunion. Michael isn't very attentive when Tommy is in town, though. He's late to pick Tommy up from the airport. He leaves him home with the housekeeper for long stretches of time, and he backs out of a promise to take Tommy to Disneyland in favor of meeting Gina's dad at a horse race. Michael drops Tommy off at an indoor kiddie playground. After the races, Michael runs to pick Tommy back up again and ends up getting into a minor car accident. He hastily jots his information down for the other driver and leaves, only to find that Tommy called the housekeeper to save him from the kiddie zone. Tommy doesn't rat Michael out to his parents, but once he's back home, obviously Tommy's mom finds out that Tommy did nothing while in LA. So Tommy's mom then tattles to Michael's parents. And on top of all of that, the police show up to Michael's house because Michael wrote down bad information when he hit the other car. He lied to his parents and said that it was a hit and run when actually the car accident was his fault. So his parents are pissed all around. As punishment, Michael's parents sentence him to a month in Montana on the ranch. If Tommy or his mom complain about Michael at all, then he is not going to be allowed to go on a European vacation with Gina. On the ranch, Michael has a hard time acclimating, and it's all made worse by the fact that Tommy is exacting country revenge. It involves a lot of like early mornings and shoveling manure and fence posts. It's great. You know, a lot of nothing happens, but it's all, I don't know, slightly creative, on the nose country revenge. It's great. It all comes to a head when Michael snaps and says very mean things to Tommy about how the family reunion was like, it doesn't mean they're best friends. They yell at each other and feelings are hurt. But one of the ranch hands has a come to Jesus with Michael and reveals that Tommy and his mom are actually losing the ranch because of that medical debt. Michael feels really bad and he realizes that he's not self-centered anymore and he is also better at ranch things and riding horses. So his, you know, turnaround really comes into focus. He wants to help the ranch, so he calls his dad, but his dad tells him that he's already offered to help Tommy's mom, who won't accept the money from his parents. So Michael heads back to LA after the month and goes to another race with Gina and her dad, but now he has horse feelings because he spent a month in Montana. And right after the race, so Gina's dad bought a racehorse and the horse kind of goes a little wild, and Michael is the one who calms the horse down, learning something, using something that he learned at the ranch, because now he's a horse person. Michael realizes that, you know, he doesn't really want to be back in LA and he doesn't want to go on this trip with Gina. So he cancels it. He has something more important to do. He ends up selling his Porsche. He cashes in his trust fund. I don't know if you cash in a trust fund. I don't know how trust funds work. I don't have one. But he gets money from his trust fund and he goes back to Montana. But Tommy's mom won't accept his money either. So they go through with this auction on the ranch. They're going to sell off all of their possessions. Everyone is very sad. As Tommy and Michael are carrying out a trunk for the sale, they talk about what's in the trunk, which is a bunch of Tommy's old schoolwork. And this makes Michael remember the last paper that he did for college. He ended up getting a D, but it was for his real estate development class. So he runs in to call his father to pull that paper and read him back the portion about land trusts. And inspired by this, he hops on his horse and gallops into town in order to talk to the bank. And he convinces the bank to put the land into trust because there is a herd of wild horses that live on the ranch. So Michael races back to the ranch and cancels the auction and reveals to everybody that the bank has agreed to let them stay on the land. They don't own it anymore, but their debt is covered by the land trust, and everybody hugs and is happy. And then Michael and Tommy go on to work on a treehouse, which I never mentioned, but holds a lot of emotional significance in this movie. The end.
During that, you came up with two better titles for this movie. One, Horse Feelings, and two, Country Revenge.
Yes, truly, Country Revenge is the actual title of this movie, and I shall be referring to it as that henceforth. Okay, well, before we discuss all the things that happened in Country Revenge, Matt, what is the cast of Country Revenge up to now?
Well, this is one of maybe the more dense Where Are They Now segments, just because we've got the Lawrence brothers in this, and they have done a lot of things throughout the years. So I'm going to start with some of the smaller players in this film and we'll work up to those guys. First off, we have Susan Walters, who plays Jules Biggs, who is Tommy's mom in this. I want to start with her just because she is still acting. She is not familiar to me, but she's recently been on Teen Wolf and The Flash. So I'm guessing some of her audience would recognize her from one of those things. More recognizable to me was the actress playing Michael's mom, who was Leanne Hunley, played J.C. Woods. She is still acting, and I recognized her because she played Logan's mom on Gilmore Girls, and she also played the teacher that Pacey slept with on Dawson's Creek.
Oh, I knew she looked familiar. Yes.
Yeah, that was my thing, too. I was like, she looks so familiar, and I can't place it. And then like went to IMDb. I was like, oh, yep. Dawson's Creek, that's what it was.
And that's totally like right in that sweet spot of she was a significant enough character in both of those parts that like if you watched those shows, you know that face, but she's just minor enough that she's forgettable.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
That you wouldn't like hold on to that and recognize her immediately when you see her.
It's those shows that have like hundreds of episodes, but she's in like six of them on each show. And like a lot of other DCOM stars, she is currently on Days of Our Lives. So I'm sure I don't watch soap operas. I haven't since like I was 8 and my mom watched them and I kind of had to. So I don't watch any currently. But I'm wondering if you just watch episodes of like Days of Our Lives and General Hospital now, is it just like DCOM reunion all the time?
I hope so.
Next up, we have somebody, a returning guest to the podcast, I will say. We have Robin Thomas, who plays Glenn Woods, Michael's dad, who you might remember as Calabar from Halloween Town.
Oh, hello, Calabar.
Yeah. I don't know. I have like Disney, like DCOM actor amnesia, because also I was like, that man is so familiar. We just watched Halloween Town. It wasn't that long ago.
Right.
And I completely just did not associate him with that. But yeah, that's him.
But most importantly, though, he's Greg's dad.
Yes, on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Yeah,
that's the really important thing that he is.
Yes, and if you want to know other things he's done besides that, I probably talked about them on the Halloween Town episode, so you can go back and listen to that one. But I will say, this is not the last time that we are going to be talking about Robin Thomas on this podcast. So there will be another segment where I say, go listen to those other two episodes where we talked about him before.
Next time, it's my promise to myself that I'm going to recognize that man. I'm going to be like, oh, there he is. Calabar.
I mean, I think the odds are better that you'll recognize him in the next thing we see him in. That's all I'm going to say.
I have such low hopes for myself because he did not look familiar to me at all in this movie. I was just like, ah, yes, more generic parents. I'm so sorry to that man.
Even though you have now seen both the DCOM with him and Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, yep. I've never seen that man before in my life. Et cetera, et cetera.
Next up in the cast, we have Jolie Jenkins, which is a great like superhero name. She is the actor who plays Gina, the rich girlfriend of Michael in this. She most recently is in a show on Netflix that I am not familiar with, but seems to be very popular, called Alexa and Katie. Anyone familiar with this?
No.
Nope.
Oh, okay. I thought I was going to be like the only one. But she seems to play the mom of either Alexa or Katie on that show, based purely on the fact that one of the young girls on that show looks very much like what I would imagine an actress they would cast to play the young version of her is, if that made any sense. But yes, she also may be more recognizable to some of us. Played Nikki on One Day at a Time, a woman who is super into Schneider on that show and is like the mom of one of the other kids. And there's like this thing that they have a recurring romance where they make out from time to time.
I never watched One Day at a Time. I'm like really embarrassed to admit that because I know that I should watch One Day at a Time. Everyone, all of my friends who watch it, tell me to watch it. And I have not done it. So
yes, you would love it. I don't know how this next man made it so far up my list of importance, but I like him a lot because he's in everything. But MC Gainey plays Twister, the ranch hand in this, the one who has the come to Jesus moment with Michael. He is in so many things, and he's just one of those guys that you recognize and you're like, I know I've seen him somewhere. But he's in things like Con Air. He was a regular on Lost. He was on Riverdale. He was in the Mighty Ducks. He was on Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. He's a voice in Tangled. He's the naked man who runs at the camera in the movie Sideways. He's in a lot of things. But he's just one of those sort of like character actors who pops up in anything and everything. And I don't know if any of you have a like specific MC Gainey role that jumps to mind where you recognize him from. But for me, it's always either Con Air or Lost where I see his face.
I did not recognize him, but I have 100% watched this man on any number of things that you just listed. But I did not have that sense of like, oh, wow, it's that guy while I was watching. But yeah, Lost. I probably watched him on Lost.
He was Papa Poutine on Riverdale, Sari.
Okay, this is what I was trying to do. I was like, this is my only possible link, and it has to be in seasons 1 through 3.
My actual answer to that is Justified, where he played Bo Crowder, which yes, it's all coming together for me now.
I feel like he's just one of those guys who pops up in everything. His character ends up dying, like sort of a sad death for a villain in a lot of things. That's sort of like how I associate him, is like he's the villain that you kind of like in a lot of movies. All right, so to the two most important men and boy in this movie, we'll start off with Joey Lawrence, who plays Michael Woods, who was definitely the most famous person in this movie at the time when it was coming out. I grew up knowing him mostly from the show Blossom and Brotherly Love, but he was also on a show called Give Me a Break when he was a wee little boy, which is kind of where he lack of a better word, got his break. And he went on to just kind of be famous. He is just Joey Lawrence. He was the voice of Oliver and Oliver and Company when he was a kid. Since Horse Sense, he's been on Dancing with the Stars. He played Billy Flynn in Chicago on Broadway. He starred in the series Melissa and Joey with Melissa Joan Hart. And more recently, has been on Hawaii Five-0 and Celebrity Big Brother. Like, this guy just, he just keeps himself very busy.
I've never seen him also.
Well, I think we talked about this last time. I did not recognize. I remember us talking about at the end of the last episode about like, ooh, the Lawrence brothers.
I don't know.
I miss them. I miss the cultural wave and instead lived under a rock.
I mostly know them from, like, they did a number of Disney sort of things, and like that to me is where they live most strongly in my brain. But also, like as Matt said, they were kind of all over the place. Like they were ubiquitous.
Yeah, and that's why I feel like every sort of generation has their own Lawrence brother. Like I feel like my sisters would have had a crush on Joey Lawrence, whereas like girls my age had a crush on Matthew Lawrence, and then Andy Lawrence was like the young little scrappy little brother that we all had.
Matthew Lawrence is not in this movie, Sarah.
He is. Surprise.
Wait. Cameo. Where was he in this movie?
He has a very small cameo when Joey Lawrence gets off the plane when he first lands in Montana. Another cowboy man walks by him and looks him up and down and judges him. And that cowboy man was played by Matthew Lawrence.
Wow. I feel like a fool. Yes.
I mean, he has like 5 seconds of screen time.
You are correct. I am in the age wave of girls for whom it was Matthew Lawrence.
I watched Joey Lawrence on Blossom. So it wasn't only that he was like on Blossom. He was like a 90s teen heartthrob. It was like the kind of thing that on that show, whenever he walks into the scene, like the sound, like the laugh track or the audience or whatever went, ooh, and everyone clapped and cheered. Like that was the kind of character that he was.
He was like the reason Tiger Beat was invented.
Correct. Like the hair and the like built body and all of that. It was like a very big thing. So yeah, I am just old enough and older than all of you guys that I was on the like the very end of like Joey Lawrence.
We found the like the generational gap there. It's like, okay.
I'm like trying to look through pictures of all of them and I like can't tell which one's which as an adult. They're all like blending together. I'm like trying to flip back and forth between this like child photo shoot, adult. I need to stop because my brain's going to break and I'm not going to think about this horse movie.
Uh-huh. You're going to be driven to madness by images of the Lawrence brothers.
Yeah.
There's also lots of examples where in different films or TV shows, like Andy Lawrence has played the young version of Joey Lawrence because as children, they look identical. And so there are things where you would see like Andy Lawrence and Joey Lawrence playing the same character in a thing. And it's like, that's not going to help Sari's confusion at all. But yes, they are. They seem like very like charming, sweet boys who all still really like each other, which is nice for like celebrity families because based on most of their online presence is focused on promoting each other's work, which is really nice.
Aww.
Yeah. And that seems very sweet and wholesome. And so, yes, getting to our star of the film, we have Andy or Andrew Lawrence. He's been credited as both in different things, but he plays Tommy Biggs. He has continued acting and doing other appearances, not as much as Joey, but he has also been on episodes of Melissa and Joey and Hawaii Five-0 because all the Lawrence brothers have to appear on those things at some point. I think it's in their family contract. But maybe more familiar to some of us, he was also the voice of TJ Detweiler on Recess.
I haven't watched Recess either. Oh,
so,
oh no, I don't know.
Sari, that
point,
was your moment to be that, like, yeah, oh, that's
I kind of thought that would be it. I thought right. Sari would be like, oh, I know Recess.
That was like, I figured it out. I know how Sari's going to recognize him.
I know. Well, I heard you all stop talking as though it was my turn to respond and have a revelation. And it was like, I'm so sorry. I do know of Recess. I was 3 years old when it started coming out. And I think I started watching cartoons like slightly afterwards. So I remember Doug. I remember Hey Arnold. And I guess I watched some things from the mid 90s. Like my dad watched The Monsters Show that was scary and Ren
Real
and
Monsters.
Stimpy.
Yeah,
that one.
The Monster Show. Recess was a Disney cartoon, though. So that's mm-hmm. so everything mm-hmm. that Sari just named is all Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
And Recess was on Disney, on the Disney Channel. So
this makes sense.
Yes.
I watched Nickelodeon, Cartoon Network, Kids WB. No Disney.
But Recess now on Disney Plus. So I guess if you're out there watching these DCOMs with us,
you got a craving for a cartoon.
But he recently was on this show that I keep referencing that everyone, if you really want to know where some of these people are, you should go subscribe to Christy Carlson Romano's YouTube channel, because she does yes. this show called Throwback Kitchen, where she has other DCOM stars and other child stars on to like make food loosely associated with something they were in at some point. Andy Lawrence was on a recent episode, and they talk a little bit about Horse Sense and just their Disney experiences. And I wanted to bring up sort of this last fact that didn't really fit in with either brother specifically, but there's a sort of like musical trend amongst the Lawrence brothers that is an interesting one to me, because Joey Lawrence had some, I will say, experiments with music in the 90s. He put out albums in like 93 and 97, and from listening to them, it sounds like he got stuck in the worst spot right between New Kids on the Block and like NSYNC Backstreet Boys, and he wasn't sure which direction to go with his music, and so he just landed on not great pop music. That being said, Andy Lawrence makes amazing music. And that's not, I'm not being sarcastic in any way. Like, in looking this up, I found his SoundCloud where 8 days ago he released a new song called Moon Dust, and he plays like really, really good sort of like coffee shop folk. And he has a really good voice, and it served as like the background to my research for this episode, was like his SoundCloud page. So please go check that out if you enjoy that sort of music. It's I think it's just like Andy Lawrence music on SoundCloud, but he is really good. And like in the, one of those surprising, you expect a child actor to not make good music kind of things, but he's mm-hmm. actually really good.
You expect Joey Lawrence and are surprised by Andy Lawrence.
Yeah, like, yes. Don't, you can just skip all the Joey Lawrence music probably and just skip right to Andy Lawrence. But they did collaborate recently, trying to get some of that like Hanson brother heat. In 2017, they formed a band called Still Three and released a song that is from a different era. It was released in 2017, but it sounds like 1994 Boys to Men jams, and it's not great. And so I'm not going to blame Andy for that one, because his music proves that he's great at everything. So I'm going to blame one of the other Lawrences for writing and producing that song. I'm not sure who. Maybe we can throw Matthew under the bus. He's not doing anything else. So one of them is to blame, I think, for the Still Three poppy song. So don't go listen to that. Only listen to Andy Lawrence's music. That is my time. Check out my SoundCloud / Andy Lawrence's SoundCloud.
Yeah. Patreon bonus perk, Matthew Gatos reviews every song on Andy Lawrence's SoundCloud.
Oh my god. Wow.
Spoiler alert, all great.
I love this as like a, well, no, it's like a, it's a monthly perk. Like once a month, Matthew Gatos listens to and reviews an Andy Lawrence song.
Really, and then does a cover of that Andy Lawrence song.
I am okay with all of this.
More than a review, I just want the emotional response to these songs. Like, I just want you to be in your feelings as you listen
Matthew
to
Gatos reacts. Yeah, yeah, it's not a review. They're Matthew Gatos reacts.
I mean,
videos.
I do want the audience and you, my fellow podcast host, to go listen to these songs, because they are surprisingly enjoyable. And I think, like, I don't know, it's just not at all what I expected when I found out that he did music. So I think everyone should be able to have that pleasant surprise moment for themselves.
So now it is time to talk about Horse Sense / Country Revenge. First things first, nostalgia check. Do you remember watching this movie?
Nope.
I thought that my memories would be more hazy, but once the movie got started, there were a couple things that stood out to me, so I definitely did watch this.
While this is technically a yes or no question, I feel like there's this like sliding scale gray zone in between of like, I have this feeling that I saw it, but I remember nothing about it. And this movie is in that gray zone for me, but it is more towards the no side of like, I really truly remember nothing about it except this like very vague sense of, I think I saw this.
Absolutely not.
Did you enjoy this movie?
It sounded to me like Sari did not, based on that very emphatic, absolutely not.
Right. There was an intensity to her.
Yeah.
I didn't hate it. It just like blends in with, I looked at this list of DCOMs that I've supposedly watched. Fake news. And I slotted it in as my current eighth place between Under Wraps and The 13th Year. Better than You Lucky Dog. I just was kind of meh about it. I don't particularly care about horses. Tommy was great. Like, he was a plucky little kid who just wanted to be kind to horses, which was great. But yeah, otherwise, I felt generally meh towards it. I didn't find a lot of it funny. I didn't find a lot of it heartfelt. Yeah, shrug.
Yeah, I think for me, it feels like somewhat similar. Like, it kind of washed over me. And at times, I forgot it was still happening to me. Like, I was sitting there thinking that, like, how is this still going? Like, I know this plot. Like, I can predict everything that's going to happen. And yet, I still have 40 minutes left of this movie.
Mm-hmm. It felt like there were a lot of turns, like, but most of them didn't matter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't expect him to hate the treehouse, and then he started tearing it apart. I was like, oh, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, because they set it up pretty well. Like, early on, you're like, oh, obviously Michael's gonna rebuild that treehouse for him as like a sweet right. gift. Like, that'll be his turning moment, which we do get. But I did enjoy that there was the twist of him hating it.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something in my brain that doesn't know how to connect a DCOM with like an adult. I know that like Tommy is kind of the main character, but kind of, because the arc really belongs to Michael and it's like mm-hmm. his redemption or whatever. And so you're watching this 20-year-old in a DCOM, and it hasn't happened to us, I don't think, since You Lucky Dog, which was yeah. also kind of a mess. So it's always a little like weird to be watching the arc of an older character within the framework of a DCOM, because it definitely hit a lot of the notes that you would expect, at least in terms of like city boy in the country, and he's so into himself, but then he gets better. It did do a few things like the treehouse where I was like, okay, that's not exactly what I expected, but for the most part, it was just like, I don't know, sort of generic. It was fine. I didn't hate it as much as some of the ones that are on the bottom of my list, but yeah, it definitely will blend into the rest. The only thing that I think will stand out about this is the fact that it had the Lawrence brothers in it.
Yes, this will be the Lawrence brothers horse movie that will be your brain. All that I remember about it. That will like stick with me as a fact, but beyond that, I won't remember much else. It's also like a middling entry in my list, and I think that that's a really good point too about watching this like 20-year-old have the DCOM arc. I think it's clear that this movie is what it is because it's a Lawrence brothers DCOM, but like that character really should have been 16. Like that Michael should have, if Michael had been a 16-year-old, I feel like, cause he has to be old enough to drive in order for the rest of the movie to work. But if you made that character 16, it was really difficult for me to watch this 20-year-old treat a child like shit. I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm not into this character. He is like, he kind of sucks. And I like, don't really care about his redemption journey. Like, I don't know. You're a child whose dad just died really right. looks up to you. Like, suck it up for 4 fucking days, dude. I don't know. Like, the whole beginning of the movie was just so annoying to me. I did thoroughly enjoy Tommy's, like, country revenge or whatever, because, like, fuck that guy. He sucked.
The one thing that I wish, I loved Arlene as a character and the fact that she became best friends with Tommy even though he was stuck in the house because Michael's being a jerk. I could have watched a whole movie of them just going on adventures, or if she had gone to Montana and like decided to stay. I don't know. That's all. More Arlene. She was interesting. Michael was annoying.
I think also you brought up the fact that he should have been a teenager. If you know, if only they had had a teenaged Lawrence that they could have cast right. instead of Joey right. Lawrence. Oh, wait, they did. His name's Matthew.
True.
Like, he was still a little bit old because, like, I think him and Joey are, like, really close in age. And then Andy is the much younger one. But, like, he could have more convincingly played, like, a 16, 17-year-old at the time.
Right. He could have been a movie 16-year-old.
Yeah. And I
right.
think that definitely could have worked because, like, yeah, he just got this car maybe that he wrecks. And he does, like... If he's closer in age to his little cousin, it makes sense then that they used to be really close and right. now have like grown a little bit apart, because I think we all have like family members like that. When you're younger, 3 years doesn't seem like a lot, but all of a sudden you're in high school or college and 3 years seems like a huge gap between you.
Right. Also, I just looked it up and Matthew Lawrence would have been 19 at the time, which is totally acceptable Perfect. For like right. movie 16 year old.
Right. Because Joey Lawrence was like 23 at the time.
That's my first fix for this movie is cast Matthew Lawrence and make him 16.
Yeah. Rather than Joey Lawrence, who was the producer of this film, or at least one of the producers, felt a little bit like, OK, I'm going to play this guy. And also, I'm going to be wearing a tank top a lot. Like, I'm going to be sweaty. Awesome. I'm going to wear a tank top and some cool sunglasses. That's my part in this film.
The one thing you're not going to catch me complaining about is that tank top, Matt. So I'm sorry.
Yeah, all the low angle shots.
I'm with you on everything else.
Him building the fence and the sign.
I think the thing about The Country Revenge that I really enjoyed the most is that it wasn't like very overt revenge. Like, he would give him instructions and even try to help sometimes, like, want me to show you? And then Michael would always be like, no. And then he would do the wrong thing. So it was like clever revenge. He mm-hmm. was, he like left the wheelbarrow in the manure, but then the tractor was just off on the other side. That's so good.
Yeah, there's lots of vehicles out of sight jokes that he pulls. The other truck is over there. You just didn't see it. You didn't ask. Mm-hmm. Why would I tell you that the other truck is over there?
Well, but also it's like it all would have stopped being revenge if Michael would have stopped being so proud. Like, that's the thing. Is it at any point in time, Michael could have saved himself by asking more questions, but and like not insisting that he knew best. And so like it was subtle. Partially because it had a clear, I don't know, like intent behind it. Like, if you stop sucking, this will all get better for you.
He never stopped sucking. I mean,
but no. He never stopped. Yeah, spoiler alert. He never stopped sucking.
Yeah. And I think that's what, like, part of that for me is, one, again, we're watching a 20-year-old man struggle with these things. So it was a little bit harder to buy that he was so dense. And it also just kind of made the movie more boring that this was such a drawn out arc. Like, I think if yeah. this was like an episode of some TV show, it would have felt more okay mm-hmm. that this happened like mm-hmm. more quickly. But because it was drawn out over like an hour and a half or whatever, it just took forever for him to understand why he was a douche.
Yeah. I mean, it could even have been a two-part. You know, you could have had one episode where Michael goes to L.A. and then the next episode is where Tommy goes to L.A. and then the next episode is Michael coming to Montana, you know, two-parter. Spread out over.
Yeah, that's how it felt. Like, as soon as the moment, like, when he's getting back in the car to go to the airport, Tommy is, after visiting L.A., I'm like, this feels like the end of a movie. Like, this feels right. like something that we've already experienced the whole story in, like, 10 minutes. Like, what else is there? Like, what's going to happen now? Because that felt like a pretty good narrative arc, but you gave it to us in the first 10 minutes of this movie.
I took a couple notes. I took 3 notes while watching this because there were things that I had such a strong... I was so amused. I laughed out loud and I had to stop and write them down. First of all, the mouth alarm at the beginning was so funny to me. There's so... In this movie, when we first see Michael... before we even see him, we see him, he's being woken up by a video alarm clock that is just a close-up of a woman's mouth saying, wake up, it's 12:15, wake up, it's 12:15. And this was so hilarious to me for all the things that it is meant to signify in the context of a Disney Channel original movie. Like, it's clearly the intro to This Man Is Rich, because he has a video alarm clock. Hilarious. Second of all, it's a DCOM. Like, it's not going to do anything sexy, but this is clearly meant to be like a sexy woman. Like, that's like the idea, right? is like he has a sexy lady waking him up in the morning, but it's her mouth. Like, it's just a video of her mouth. I don't know. Everything about this was hilarious to me.
Yeah, no, I think that especially that line, like the way that alarm clock is used and the transition to it, is that it makes it seem like, I flash back to Xenon, of like the differences between the space station and Earth, of like the contrast they're trying to draw between Montana and Beverly Hills in that moment is like they're working on the farm and they say something like, well, life's not that different in Beverly Hills, is it? And it cuts to video mouth.
Tommy has the line about, you know, what about the money? And like, so they do all of that right away, that like, mm-hmm. we're working hard and money's tough and life's not that different in Beverly Hills. Cut to mouth video alarm.
The best thing about the mouth is that he wakes up with this like shit eating grin and turns over like all happy. I don't know. It's so weird. Just me and my mouth alarm clock. Okay, calm down.
In that moment, I was like, wait, are they trying to like say that Montana is in the past and like Beverly Hills is like 10 years in the future, of like they have video screens everywhere and like home assistants and all this thing? It's like Smart House in Beverly Hills, but it's still the Wild West in Montana.
No, I choose to interpret that moment as, when you have lots of money, you wake up happy and not sad. You wake up at noon and you're happy. So I don't know. Sounds legit to me. The other thing that I wrote down because it made me laugh so much was the Zoomy realization about land trusts, because it was just so out of nowhere. For context, the way that we get to the big, you know, we save the farm by converting it to a land trust, is that they are auctioning off all of the family's belongings, and Michael and Tommy are carrying out this giant chest that, you know, seems very nice and like it will fetch a good price at this auction, but is still inexplicably full of all of Tommy's school stuff. Like, nobody thought to empty that out before putting this chest up to auction. I do not buy that this woman who cares so much about her family wouldn't have done that. Regardless, it's full of papers, and they carry it out, and Michael is like, oh, you got an A on a test. The last test I took, I got a D on. And then like the camera like zooms in on him and she's like, oh man, the last test that I took was on land trusts. and I just, what?
I did think it was a little weird when they show him at college, like in his class, they focused a lot on what the class was about. And I'm like, mm-hmm. that's gotta come up later, because you talked like way too much for something that seems completely insignificant.
And that was kind of how I felt about, I mean, I know it's like a ranch and it's the whole deal, but they really focused a lot on the horses and the wild horses, and we named every horse and we had like scenes of just the horses running. And at first I just was like, okay, I guess it's like we're on a ranch, but then the horses are the reason that the land trust works or whatnot. But by far the scene that probably should not have made me laugh, but made me laugh a lot, was when he's back in LA watching the race. And so he's had like having all of these feelings. And you can almost see the camera work, like zooming in on him, zooming in on the horse, zooming in on the crop, going back to the wild horses, like, and it goes on and on and on. You're just like, okay, I get it.
I do think it was interesting that like for a DCOM in the late 90s to focus on the topics of like medical debt and animal abuse so prevalently, I was like, oh, okay, I don't necessarily like this movie more because of it, but those things I thought were interesting choices and maybe a little bit deeper than the average DCOM.
I don't know at what age this would have changed for me if I had seen this and like really like I don't know, clicked that it was like medical debt in there that was like ruining their life. They mention it, but it's never like a thing. It's just, I don't know, the sense of like, wow, this is a plot that probably could only happen in a handful of places, including the U.S. That was kind of wild watching it this time around.
The last thing that I wrote down is that because we live in Montana, I really want to go to a bank in Montana. And I'm going to need to bring like a Zoomy cameraman to get, you know, to have a cameraman to like, you know, key in on my feelings. But and say, how about making a difference in someone's life, huh? A positive one, and see what that does for me and my student loan debt.
What if my house was made a land trust and you just forgave all of my student loan debt? That'd be great.
Ma'am, you don't own your house. You're a renter.
There's a horse in my backyard right now. I brought this horse over because I thought this would work, and it's not. And now I have a horse? So you're saying I still have debt, and now I have a horse. Thanks a lot, Mr. Bankman. Why didn't we see Disneyland in this movie?
I don't know, man.
I really thought we were going to see Disneyland. Like, even a little bit in the middle or, like, at the end, they celebrate by going to Disneyland. Because, like, come on, Disney, you own that place. You could have easily made that happen.
I know, they really sold it as, like, a great place to go, though.
And they didn't show us an inch of it.
Yep.
And then we never got to see him ride the Indiana Jones ride.
Or Space Mountain.
Yeah, they mentioned specific rides and never go. And this was, like, in the prime era, like there's an episode of Blossom that takes place at Disneyland. Like Joey Lawrence is like Disney shill 101. I feel like they should have celebrated at the very end by like going to Disneyland. I don't know. Apparently the Lawrence boys in recent years have talked about wanting to do a sequel. So maybe one day.
I'm sorry. They've talked about wanting to do a sequel to Horse Sense?
Well, so small spoiler alert. You won't know which one it is, Sari, but there's a movie in the future of the DCOM lineage that is a sequel to Horse Sense. So they, you won't know it by the title alone. It's not like Horse Sense 2. But
dang it.
It will come up eventually. They want to make a third one, and they've talked about doing that in recent years. Like, all three of them apparently are super into it, and I think nobody else is, but they want to.
I love that Sari is now going to be on edge forever looking for the secret Horse Sense 2.
Mm-hmm. All of her future guesses are going to be like, the Lawrence brothers star in this.
Yeah, and there are inexplicably horses.
I love the way in which this has maybe just broken the Sari plot predicting algorithm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem. You gave me too much information about the future, and now I'm like, it's somewhere.
It's either 13-year-old girl story or a Lawrence brother story.
This week's group discussion topic, Montana? In my notes here, I have in front of me living in and visiting Montana is actually what we're talking about, because this movie takes place in Montana and three out of the four of us live in Montana. And I am very confident that we are not burning a topic that we're going to want to use later. So I feel really safe and secure in this. And so none of us are from Montana, by the way, but Mari came to visit me. All of us came here from much bigger cities, bigger places. And so we're just going to talk about our like first impressions of Montana.
I'm curious what your friends and family said to you before you came to Montana for the first time. Like, not only your expectations, but what people around you said. Because when I was getting ready to move to Montana, I worked at Starbucks, and all of my coworkers were like, you're going to get eaten by a bear. Like, that's what we know about Montana. It was also a very weird, like, convenient time where Montana was doing this huge tourism push at the time in 2013. And so our Starbucks looked out onto a busy Chicago street, and a ton of the Chicago buses had giant murals on the side that just said Montana, and then had a picture of a bear. Or a ram or a mountain lion. And so all like my coworkers and I would see every day was Montana, wild animal that can kill you. And so that was a little bit of coming out here. I was like, how prevalent are bears? Are they just walking around town all the time? Is this a thing? But I didn't know because I moved here without ever setting foot in Montana.
I also love the idea that your coworkers thought that you looked at the bus and had like some sort of revelation, like a movie character of your own. Like, why am I working in Starbucks when I could be in Montana? I feel like no one I knew anything about Montana because I got this job while I was still in college in Boston. When people graduate from MIT, they usually stay in the cities. Like a lot of people go to either other very illustrious universities or stay in Boston or go to like San Francisco, expensive cities. And so when I was like, I'm going to be a YouTube person and live in Montana, all of my friends really had no idea what I was talking about. I'd gone to see Hank in concert at some point. And so my friend Eric, I remember very distinctly telling or asking me, he's like, oh, you're going to go work for that musician you saw that one time? which is how little all of my friends knew about Montana and the thing that I do now.
Yeah, I think that's still the case of like, people don't know a lot about Montana. And also the world of YouTube videos is a weird world. So people really, like, if you had said, I'm moving to New York City to work on YouTube videos, there's at least one touch, like, stone there that they can go, okay, I get it. But you gave them two, like, outside-the-box things.
Yeah. The biggest question I got was, like, what's out there? And my answer was, I don't know, mountains? because I also didn't do research into Missoula. I just said I'd move there. Because that's how I live my life. No planning, just I guess I'll go.
That was entirely my experience as well. Like knew nothing, had never been here. I thought that I had driven through it. And I think I said in my interview that like I like drove through it once during a blizzard and then afterwards realized that that was actually Wyoming. So I had never been here, confused it with Wyoming, knew literally nothing about it, and also had a lot of conversations with people about how I was moving to Montana to work on YouTube videos, and like everyone was very confused, didn't have any context, and there was no like, oh, you're gonna get eaten by bears. It was just like a lot of, I'm sorry, what? When I got here, I drove from Missouri. And it was like, I don't know, I'd been driving for like 20 hours before I crossed the state line. But then once you cross the state line, there's still like 9 hours of Montana before you get to Missoula. I had stopped to sleep. But after many hours of driving, I crossed the state line and all of a sudden it was like full on whiteout conditions. And I'm in the middle of nowhere. And like eastern Montana is truly nothing. Like there's nothing there. And it was really, really bad snow. I couldn't see anything. I also couldn't like stop though, because if I stopped, then I would get snowed in the middle of nowhere. So I was like, okay, I guess I just have to like keep going. I had my mom on speakerphone a couple times, just like trying to calm me down because I was having a mild panic attack trying to drive through the snow. And I got most of the way here. I was, I don't know, about 15 miles outside of Missoula. And I changed lanes. This was where I went wrong. But it was like the problem was the roads, in addition to being incredibly slippery, it was also that thing where if you've never driven in snow, you're not familiar with this. But when you're driving through like a lot of snow, sometimes the car in front of you will like kick up stuff. So like you want to not be directly behind someone, like you need distance between you and another person. But at this point in time, the lanes were like, there was really only one lane that was like good to be driving in. But I was like, so fucking close, I could taste it. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna get into this other lane. And as soon as I did, I spun out and like completely, I like spun out, hit the median, bounced out of the median, landed in oncoming traffic. Fortunately, there wasn't that much traffic, so it was fine. But like totally wrecked my car. Fortunately, I was close enough that I got towed directly to the hotel that I was headed to that night. But yeah, so that was my first experience of Montana.
That's way worse than mine.
Hearing the story from like the friend end of it, especially because when she was like, okay, I'm going to Montana, and I was like, Why? Okay. And then hearing like, yeah, she crashed, like driving in the snow. I mean, the ongoing joke anyway was that she was moving north of the wall into the land of perpetual winter. So, and then she was like, yeah, I was driving in the snow and it crashed. I was like, wow, this is all like bad, bad, bad. But it's turned out better than that.
Yes, ultimately things improved.
So I went to visit Nicole. I've been there once. <It's> such a bad thing. I mean, Nicole and I usually meet up at places that are not our home, so we'll travel together. But I went to visit her one time, and it was over the summer, which was purposefully done. So I don't even know that I have like a true impression of Montana, but it was indeed very, very beautiful. I landed in Missoula's like itty bitty airport. And it was so hokey and weird.
You got stuffed bears.
It's stuffed bears all over the place. So that was great. I think the like first thing that one of the first things that we did when I got there is we stopped at like a grocery store. And so I had that moment in the grocery store was when I first like walking out, I turned to Nicole and I was like, Nicole, I was the only brown person in that entire grocery store. And that experience of being the only brown person like lasted for quite a bit while I was there. So that's something I was super aware of. But it was also like 4th of July weekend and we went out on like the river and we did like the raft, the floating thing, which obviously I barely have like vocabulary for it. So it was something I had never done before. It was absolutely gorgeous. It's 4th of July. We're out there floating and an eagle soars overhead in between the mountains. And I just remember whooping along with everybody else.
We were pretty drunk too.
We were quite drunk.
Adding to this.
We got so like day drunk into night drunk that we didn't even see the fireworks. We were like inside of a bar during the fireworks that year.
Well, as we're floating, I remember just somebody screaming, "Fuck yeah, America!" Which is my personal peak Montana experience.
Yeah. Sitting on the river, drunk, floating through mountains as an eagle soars overhead.
And maybe also somebody shot fireworks towards us, I think, at one point. Like, not at us, but like over us. Like, someone was like lighting bottle rockets off next to the river. So, did that match your expectations of Montana?
I mean, that particular thing did, but I think that from what I experienced of Missoula, I don't know, the categories of my brain, it's more filed under college town than like city in Montana or like, this is what I thought Montana would be. Like, I think I was more overall like, oh, this is, I travel a lot to college towns. I do a lot of campus recruiting for my current job. So like college town has like a very strong feel and it's something I'm super familiar with. And so being there, I was like, oh, okay, Missoula has that vibe above all else.
I think that's what stood out to me because after learning that this movie was set in Montana, I was trying to pay attention to Montana things. And it was like, there are too many cowboy hats here because that's not my experience of Montana because Missoula is very college town. Like there are a few people walking around with cowboy hats, but it's not like literally every person you see in town geared up like that.
Yeah, I think for our experience in Missoula, this is not accurate. Like if you think like, oh, they live in Montana, horse sense seems like the place they must live. That's not quite true. Our airport's a little bigger than the one he flies into in this. And I think there are towns very similar to this in Montana. Like no one, this will mean not much to anyone, but towns like Hamilton or Phillipsburg and these kinds of places are smaller non-college towns that aren't that far from Missoula, but definitely feel a lot more of the quote unquote Montana way that you might imagine based on watching this movie or just your general impression of what Montana is. And so I think it didn't necessarily feel like, I'm sure they shot this in somewhere in California, not actually in Montana, but it didn't feel not true when they go to like the little like downtown area. I'm like, oh yeah, that could be any number of small towns in Montana. Like that doesn't look wrong to me.
I think it is accurate when he was like, we have two movie theaters. I was like, ah, that's Missoula.
That's correct.
that one is correct. We do have two movie theaters and then we got a third. exciting.
Big news in the city.
It's a dine-in.
When he was out at night talking with his girlfriend, when Michael was out at night talking with his girlfriend and had the most green screen sky behind him, it was like purple with weird stars. Like the sky is actually pretty in Montana because like if you go out to Flathead Lake or any place that's more like farther away from city light pollution and things like that, the sky is really pretty. It does not look like that mess behind him.
Yeah, it is not like a glowing purple galaxy behind you.
Yeah.
Well, now it is time for us to share the lessons that we learned from Horse Sense.
The lesson I learned from this movie, a direct quote from Lil Tommy Biggs, we have VCRs in Montana.
The lesson I learned is that if you are in a lot of debt and a very wonderful, kind-hearted family member wants to give you money to get out of that debt, I just feel like you should take it.
You should take it.
Yes.
Literally just take it.
Wow, thank you so much. You have a lot of money and I have none. So I'm going to take this money.
The lesson I learned is that even when you ride a horse into town, remember to put a quarter in the parking meter.
And as I promised last time, the lesson that I learned is that horse people can be of any gender. All right, now it is time for Sari, the algorithm of Sari, to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we are going to be watching Up, Up, and Away.
Okay, so it stars the Lawrence brothers, and instead of horses, there are Pegasus. Just kidding. I'm not going to waste it. They wouldn't do a sequel immediately afterward.
Or would they?
Or would they? No, they need a time to break and continue working out to build up their muscles for Horse Sense too. Okay, Up, Up, and Away. Because the word up is in the title, I'm just thinking of the movie Up. And so I'm thinking of balloons. And I think that this movie is about an eccentric family of hot air balloon tycoons. And there's a family business of hot air balloons, but this young boy has no interest in hot air balloons. In fact, he's scared of heights. And his dad and his mom and maybe his like grandma who's still around, they all dress up like circus folks, ringmasters, that's it, with the big hats and the big coats, and they lead hot air balloon tours of, I don't know where they would live, Colorado. And yeah, he wants to stay grounded, and then he, in science class, gets really into airplanes, which becomes a very big point of tension in his family because they're like, we love the old way, the romantic nature of hot air balloons, because you just fly up, up, and away, and you forget about your problems here on Earth. And he's like, but I feel much safer in a plane and I can control it. And he's like, I don't know, making paper airplanes and stuff. And I've dug myself a very deep hole. Uh-huh. What's the tagline?
Oh, man. Oh, sorry. The tagline for this movie is, in a family of superheroes, the greatest power is just being yourself.
Oh, no. But aren't hot air balloon operators really superheroes in their own way?
Yeah, I haven't seen Aeronauts, but I'm sure that's what it's about.
Well, fine. They all can fly and he can't. No balloons needed, no airplanes needed. And they're like, wee, look at us. I guess the up, up, and away makes sense because that's like a superhero thing to say. Like, up, up, and away, I'm Superman or something like that. I don't know. It's probably just about this dumb kid figuring out that he can save the day with his ordinary life. I would rather watch my hot air balloon story, but I do like superpowers. So, okay, I got derailed by my own apathy to end this story. So, family of superheroes, just like pretend when I said hot air balloons, I said superheroes. Good costumes still apply. And then instead of going to superhero school, this regular kid goes to regular school, but maybe his whole family gets trapped by a super villain who uses some sort of like anti-hero technology to trap them in a bubble. Bubble seems pretty villainous. And then this boy has to use his human ingenuity and all the things that he's learned in his regular kid classes, like home ec and wood shop and his friends, to save his family by pulling wires out of control panels and very average ways of solving super problems. So maybe the villain is like freeze beams or things like that, but he just like steals the technology or throws a blanket over the villain's head and then pops the bubble and saves his family. And they're like, you're pretty super too. I was about to say Johnny, but Johnny was already the name of a protagonist. You're pretty super too, Pete.
You're getting like even more specific with your guesses than we are like asking of you. You're trying to name characters in this film now.
Yeah. I mean, okay, it is a monosyllabic, pretty generic boy name. You got
That's
close.
True.
Pete, I'm going to say Pete is pretty close.
It's more fun if I take stabs in the dark, because then you can make fun of how close I was or how horribly far away I was.
Find out next time on Cooler Than Homework if anything about that guess was correct. If you are enjoying this podcast, tell your friends, rate and review it. We would love to hear all of your thoughts on this episode and on this movie and on the Lawrence brothers. Who was your favorite Lawrence brother? There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com/decom, or you can find us all on Twitter at Decom Squad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos, and you can find Andy Lawrence's SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/AndyLawrenceMusic.
You can find me at My Name is Maddie Miss.
And I'm at C.U. Riley.
This podcast is produced by Snark Squad, edited by me, transcribed by Mari, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.